Good morning. As Egbert said, I'm Phil Switzer. I'm the wife of Adria Switzer. Usually you're supposed to say husband, but I always say wife. I'm not sure why I always mix that up, but I do. Maybe that's because I'm a good homemaker. I'm not sure. But I just want to thank you for the opportunity to do this. As you said, I'm not nervous at all. I haven't spoken about, 15 years, something like that. Feels like forever, but I just want to tell you that I am excited to speak because this is the church that has given so much to me. As a family, it has given into my wife as leading worship here and as on staff, but my kids also, my daughter, my youngest daughter especially. She just loves the youth group, loves being with the kids here, so you like that I mentioned you, Bryden? Yeah. One of the joys of being the speaker, you can embarrass people if you'd like. It's true. I was also a pastor's son, so I was the son of a preacher man. And I was a youth pastor for 10 years, but I also did 5 years of traveling youth ministry across Canada into the States. And I love doing that type of thing. Today I want to talk to you a little bit about struggles, trials, different things like that, that you might be going through, and just a story that might help you figure out how you can go through it without too many issues. You can tell that I'm a little bit nervous here, but you might know the story of Jonathan and his armor bearer. One of my favorite stories, one of my favorite Bible passages in Scripture. If we read there, I just want to start with chapter 13 of 1 Samuel chapter 13. You don't have to turn there because I'm just going to tell you the story. And if you want to check it later to see if I was right, that's no problem. And just so you know, that video, it has a little bit to do with what I have to say today. But they told me, you need a video, so I just got one. So I thought, you know, that one might fit. And I wasn't sure how to use it, but I thought we'd be okay. So in 1 Samuel 13, we see that the Israelite army, like always, is going against the foe, which is pestering them, making their lives horrible. And it's the Philistines again. And at this time, we see that Saul is king. His son is Jonathan. Jonathan is the best friend of David. We don't see David at this time because we believe this is when Saul and David are not getting along. But Jonathan is with his dad, and they've mustered an army together of 3,000 people. Not too bad, it's a decent size. And Jonathan has 1,000 of those. And what he does, he goes out and he raids an outpost of the Philistines. When he does this, the Philistines are quite excited and happy that he's done this and destroyed this army and made their lives a living bad place. No, they're not happy at all. They're very upset. They actually said the Israelites became like a stench in their nostrils. Sort of like a Monty Python kind of, you know, you smell like something or whatever it might be. And they hated them so much. So they mounted their army, the Philistines. And when they mounted their army, it wasn't little. It was massive. There's different passages will say, or different versions will say how many they actually got together. It'll say in some 30,000 chariots. Most likely it was probably 3, because they had 6,000 charioteers and approximately 30,000 soldiers. Now, when you have 3,000, you're thinking 30 against 3,000, that's not very good. Our odds aren't very good. But when the Israelites saw that there was 30,000, 3,000 chariots, 6,000 charioteers, they got scared, just like we would. If there were 600 of us today, because that's all that came out, when Saul finally called all the army back, says, okay, we're going to go fight again, only 600 showed up. So they got 600 against 30,000. That would be similar to us going against Leduc. Well, of course we'd win. We know that. There are some oil patch workers there, so they are a little tough. But I think we could do it. I think Randy, you could take a few. I'll take one. You know, the rest of you, Wes, you might be able to take a few. Not sure. And we see that this would be a very scary thing. if we were up against 30,000 people, I'd be terrified. I would be like many of the Israelites who actually, when there was 3,000, of those 3,000, many went and hid. It says they hid in caves. It says they hid in cisterns. In some of the versions, it actually says they hid in holes. I'm from Saskatchewan. Go Riders. Woo! I'm actually wearing a Rider shirt underneath here, but I was going to wear a jersey, but I thought that might not be appropriate. This is actually a very important day today, you know. Very important day for me. Because it's the Labor Day game. Oh, yeah. And it's our anniversary also. So, happy anniversary. We've been married for 23 years. But the exciting part is the Riders are going to win today. So we see that there are 600 Israelites against 30,000. They're hiding in holes. And as I said, I was from Saskatchewan. Every time I hear that they were hiding in holes, I don't know if you're, as you read scripture, you picture things. But I really don't know how they hid in holes. I don't know if they just dug a hole, you know, put some thatching above them and hid. I don't know how that works. Like, I'm thinking of gopher holes is what I always think of. And it says some are hiding in the bushes. I don't think they were good at hide and seek. It doesn't seem like that would be the best place to go. But they were. They were hiding out because they were terrified. They were going into cisterns. They were going different places. And they were terrified of dying. Terrified of being routed. And they were sitting under a tree. Saul is trying to figure out, what can I do? And if he would have thought, if only he would have been able to rally them a little better. Maybe if you've ever seen Henry V by Shakespeare, there's a quote or actually a speech that he gives. It's on St. Crispin's Day. If you've ever seen it, if you haven't, you need to watch it. It's incredible. He rallies the troops and he says, you know, there's only, it's five against, it was the odds were 1-5. The English against the French in this Henry V. And he rallies the troop and he says, we don't want any more. We don't want more people because they don't get the glory that we have. But Saul doesn't do that. Saul doesn't rally the troops. Saul sits down on the ground with his troops and sulks and doesn't know what to do. He actually goes even farther on after that and tries to take the role of a priest, a prophet, and do things he shouldn't do. But we see that they're sulking. And what is Jonathan doing at this time? Jonathan is sitting there and he's looking down. I could just imagine him. He's looking down into his hand and he sees his sword. Now, something I didn't mention yet, but they're 600 against 30,000. But worse off was they only had two swords. Two swords in all of Israel. Why that was is because the Philistines took all their blacksmiths. So they had two swords. So these guys had pokey sticks, maybe a bat, maybe a rake. Not fighting tools you want to use. So this adds to why they were so scared, why they were overwhelmed, why they couldn't do it. But Jonathan looks down and he sees that sword in his hand. And it's sort of like when Moses was asked by the burning bush God, what do you have in your hand? When he said, I can't do it. And Moses said, I have a staff. And he says, throw it to the ground. Threw it to the ground, it becomes a snake. Moses is terrified. God tells him to pick it back up, and he picks it up. But what was it really? It was a staff. That's all it was. It wasn't anything special. But when God uses what you have in your hand, it becomes extraordinary. And Jonathan looks down and he says, I have a sword in my hand and I can do something. He would have thought of all the stories. He would have thought of Gideon, because those stories would have been passed down. Gideon, he won with 300 against multitude of an army. He would think of David when he fought Goliath. And these things encouraged him. I can just imagine him sitting there going, man, I think I could do something. These guys aren't going to help though. And he looks to his armor bearer. His mentor or mentee looks at them and says, why don't you come with me? They sneak off. And as they sneak off, if I was the armor bearer, I think I'd be very scared now. thinking, what is Jonathan going to do? I saw him a while ago go against the thousand, with a thousand and wipe out an outpost. That was pretty cool. But what are we going to do today? Jonathan says to him, let's go to an outpost and do what we did before. God can save whether there's by few or by many. And the armor bearer says, my favorite verse in all, I shouldn't say in all scripture, but one of my favorite verses. The armor bearer says to him, do all that you have in mind, his armor bearer said. Go ahead, I am with you, heart and soul. Incredible. He's ready to die with Jonathan, because that's what he's thinking. So Jonathan says to him, okay, let's go over to that outpost. What we'll do is we'll run over there, and what we'll do is we'll jump out, we'll show them that we're there. If they call us, if they tell us to stay down, we will stay down. If they tell us to come up to them, we will know that God has given them into our hands. Jonathan and his armor bearer, they go over there, and they're hiding behind trees, and they jump out. There's a cliff on one side and one on the other, and the outpost is up there. And as he jumps out, he says, hey, you uncircumcised fellows. If you don't know what that means, ask Egbert later. He says that to them, and they say to him, hey, you, look at, the Israelites are coming out of their holes. Why don't you come up to us? Come up here. We'll take you on. And what do they do? Jonathan looks at his armor bearer and says, follow me. They start to climb. Now, the cliffs in Israel, has anybody been to Israel? Not much of a cliff there, is there? Sort of hills. But this area, though, was an area where there was cliffs. And they climbed it. And I always think of Princess Bride when the guy's climbing. And he says, hey, could you be a little quicker? Yeah, well, maybe you could throw me a rope. Whatever it might be. And he's down there, he's climbing. Philistines are looking over. Maybe you could hurry up. Yeah, well, don't worry, I'm just going to come up and beat you up anyways. And he gets up there with his armor bearer. And I don't know how it works. I always imagine this. As he gets up there, I don't know if they're waiting for him, if they give him a chance to get rested, if he could take the rocks out of his shoe. But he gets up there, and it says, Jonathan and the armor bearer killed 20 of the outposts. Now, there could only have been 20 up there. They killed them all. That's incredible. Amazing. A little battle was won that day. Some of you are going through battles. Some of you are going through rough times. I'm going to be honest with you right now. If I start crying, it's normal. I cry. I'm a crier. I'm emotional. Some of you go through rough times. And some of you are going through rough times right now. This is a church where I've been very impressed with how you go through your trials. Seeing many of you, have talked to many of you that have went through trials in the past. Through cancer, and they went through that. I remember one of them saying, I've never felt so close to God as when I was going through my time with cancer. Some of you financially might be going through trials. Some of you are going through relational trials. And it seems insurmountable. Seems like you can't do it. Seems like you don't know what you can do. What are you going to do? What do you have in your hand? What are you able to do? Last week I was talking with Dietmar. I just asked him if he would be okay if I just said something. And Dietmar has been an encouragement to me since we've come to the church here. He's went through some rough times. And sometimes he's probably not enjoyed. Well, I shouldn't say sometimes. I know you don't. Yay, those are fun. But I see God working through you. I see how his wife is sometimes his Jonathan. How she's saying, come on. And sometimes he's probably the Jonathan and say, look, okay, we can keep going. We can keep doing this. My son, I don't have a son yet. In a month. I was talking with my son-in-law-to-be. And I just wanted to give him a few words of advice after I cocked the shotgun. I was just talking to him, but no. I was talking to him, I said, Jonathan is his name. I said, Jonathan, you know, there's going to be times when it's rough in marriage. There's times when you won't get along. Now, Adrian and I have got along except for that one day. 1982 or something like that. Oh, we didn't meet yet. Yeah. But Adrian and I, we've had rough times too. And I said, told him, I said, you know, when you go through those rough times, you got to understand that there's going to be days that Selena, that's my daughter, she's going to be strong and you're going to be weak. There's going to be times when you're strong and she's weak. But that's the best part of marriage, is being there for each other and being able to do that. And there was a time with Adrian and I when we were in India. So back in 1988, I was in Bible school. I went to a crazy wild Pentecostal Bible school. We weren't that wild. It was actually pretty mild. But I remember one day there was a missionary who was speaking. And as he spoke, he was saying, I'd like you to come to the front if you would be willing to give your time to do things for Jesus. And I can't remember the song, but I remember it was something about here I am, wholly available, is what the song was. I remember walking to the front. Actually, I didn't walk to the front. I was a pastor's kid, so I didn't go to the front. I always stayed back. I thought, my altar could be anywhere I want, and I don't have to go to the front like everybody wants me to. So I was sitting there at the back, and I remember just thinking, Lord, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And in my head pops India. I was like, oh, cool. Don't know what that means. 1988. India popped into my head. And I was obsessed from then on. I couldn't stop thinking of India. And I remember I was on this program, Life Force. It was a discipleship program, and I was one of the leaders of it. And we were having a prayer time one day. And as we're praying, I'm sitting down. It's in the same Bible school, actually. I'm sitting down, and I'm praying. And I have a vision or a dream or whatever you want to call it. It's probably more of a dream. And I see this dream of me in India, or somewhere like that. Sort of crazy dream. And they grabbed me, and they put me on a cross, and they crucified me. I'm about 24 years old at this time. Maybe a little older, maybe. No, I was 26. And I remember just thinking, at 26, I wasn't married, didn't have a girlfriend, and all I could think was, cool. I'm going to die. It wasn't wise thinking, but I really thought that. I did. I was like, I'm going to be a martyr. I didn't think of the pain. I didn't think of anything. I'm not a wise man, but as I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking of it, a friend comes up to me. And he says, Phil, I've got something I got to tell you. And I said, I know what you're going to say. He's crying. Just tears streaming down his face. Remember, we're Pentecostal, so we cry. And his tears are just streaming down his face. And I said, Lindsay, I know what you're going to say. And he goes, no, you don't. I said, yeah, you're going to tell me I'm going to die in India. And he goes, how'd you know? I just had a vision of you dying in India. So now I'm like, this is cool. Really cool. So I am excited to go to India. Now, I never did get to go. I didn't have the funds, all those things. For years, I didn't get to go. I remember one of the first times Adrian and I went out for, I don't know, a date or something. We didn't date very much. What, about 2 weeks or something like that, and then we got married? No, little longer. I'm not joking. It wasn't much different. We dated, I think, actually 2 months before we got married. But we're still together 23 years. Engaged for 2 months. Yeah, yeah. We dated for about 2 weeks. Then we got engaged. No, I'm not sure. You're not supposed to do this when you speak. It's not right. But one of the first things I told her when we started dating was, or when I got to know her, is, just so you know, I'm going to die in India. Like, I was really good. I was smooth. I wasn't very bright. That's why I didn't get married till I was 27, was because I was just an idiot. So I tell her, pretty much going to die in India. And she was like, okay, that's all right. I said, it might not really happen. We know that. We know with things like this, it could be just maybe a spiritual thing or a metaphor for something that might happen. So what happens is in 2001, we decide to go over there. We go over to India. And I'm expecting to die. I don't know what we were. Yeah. I felt it was God. That's why I had to go. I had to go. And Adria and I, we go over to 2001. We've got two young kids. They're 3 and 4. Some of that. Two and three. Some of that. We go over there. And I remember one of the things that I had to do is I had to go away from the family all by myself. Not all by myself. Sorry, with the team, without the family. Without the team. Oh, sorry, let me get this straight. Without the family, with the team. And we're going on a train, and I have to go second class. If you've been in India, second class, Indian trains are not fun. It's rough. It's hot. The rest of the team was in first class. I was in second class with another guy. But as I'm getting onto the train, my oldest daughter says to me, "Daddy, don't go." She wasn't an emotional kid, and she's bawling and starts to scream, "Daddy, don't go. Don't go, don't go," bawling, streaming down her face, hot tears. And I'm like, uh-oh, it's going to happen. The good story is, I think you guys know the end of it. It didn't happen. But we did go to India in 2005. We moved there to be missionaries. I loved it. Adrian and I, when we went in 2001, we both loved it. It was incredible. One of the best things we've ever done. 2005, though, wasn't as easy for Adria. We pulled into the city that we were going to live in. And it wasn't what we remembered. It was gross. I'm not belittling India. I love it to this day. But this city we were in was not nice. It was the dusty time of the, I don't know if they actually have that. Is there rainy, sunny, and then there's dusty? It was just, every tree was covered in gray dust. So when you drove in, it was gray and the clouds were out. It was dusty and it was depressing. And Adria instantly started to go into a depression. Right that day, right on the day, we landed and she started to go into a depression. And it got so bad over a year later that Adria didn't want to be there anymore. And I don't mean India. I mean Earth. She didn't want to be here anymore. And what happened was, I was sick one night, which happens quite often in India, where your stomach's off. And I was inside the house, and she went out to lock up the gates, which we always do. Lock them up and put your padlock on the inside. And she goes out, and I didn't hear her come back. But I was sick. I wasn't thinking of that. She came back about 10 minutes later. And I said, "Where were you? Why did it take so long? It should take 15 seconds. And she said, "I decided I was just going to keep walking." I'll get a hold of myself. "I was just going to walk," she said, "until someone would grab me, take me, and get rid of me." You shouldn't do those things. I was so mad. It was crushing me. My wife was, I wouldn't say she was suicidal, but she did want to, I always called it a death wish. She wanted someone else to do it for her. And that's what happened that day. And I felt like I was up against an army that was too big. I didn't know what to do. So I said, "What can I do? I can email people and figure out what do I do? What do I do?" So I reached out to my mentor from North Vancouver, my pastor, and I said, "Owen, what do I do? I'm called here. God's called me here. I can't leave. Then I'm saying no to God." And he said, "No, you got to look after your wife. You got to come back." We came back. Adria got better. I went back to India just to close things down. Now, as I was there, I remembered that vision of dying in India. And I died. And I was okay with it. I was okay with dying. My vision of being in India died. What I wanted to do for many, many years since I was 19 years old was destroyed. But I was okay. because God had shown me that I was going to have to die to it. And I was all right with it. And I felt like it was a time where I had people come up alongside of me, people who were a Jonathan to me, who said, here, follow me. Here, follow me. Here, this is what you should do. Because I couldn't think. I couldn't even figure out what to do for sure. And they were saying, just, it's going to be good. And I was at a funeral. I still remember that. I'm at the funeral. And it was actually of a lady from a teammate of ours in India. And as she died, I was thinking, God, why do you not heal everybody? I don't understand this. Why did you not heal Adria? Why did you not heal her? And I felt like God said to me that day, sometimes I heal people. Sometimes I bring them out of their situation. Hers was bringing her out of India. And I had a peace that day. I said, okay, God, I think I understand. And I felt like I was okay. Some of us are going through rough times with your relationships. There's always hope. There's always hope. Maybe physically. Maybe it's financially. But what do you have in your hand? What can you do? Who can you lean on? And as a church, we need to be available for others. We need to be available for others, whatever it might be. If all they need is just for you to sit there with them, will they cry? Or for you to say to someone, you know what? Financially, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. Maybe it's giving a hug. Maybe it's cracking a joke. Whatever it might be. We need to be ready. We need to be, don't be afraid of that. And in that also, I say, we need to keep our distance from people sometimes. Because when I'm going through a rough time, I don't always want my wife saying stuff. But you got to pray and ask God, when can I be a Jonathan to this person? When people go through rough times and they come through on the other side, they become heroes to us. Dietmar, you're a hero of mine. You will be, always. You went through some rough times. Adrian, you're a hero to me. I want to encourage us to be people that will not look at things as just insurmountable, not just see the obstacle, not just see it as, I can't do it, but through God, all things are possible. What God can save, whether by few or for many, by many. At this time, if I could have the worship team come up. I'd like us just to pray at this time for those who are going through rough times. I have a friend of mine who's going through a rough time in Vienna. A roommate I had in Bible college. I'd like to pray just for all those. And if you are going through a rough time, you don't need to stand. You don't need to. Just know that we're praying for you and that we're there for you. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I thank you for this congregation, Lord, of heroes. Lord, I thank you for those that have shown me different ways to live through the struggles. Lord, I pray for those of us that can be helpers, that can be an armor bearer that backs them up. That says, wherever you go, I'll be with you, heart and soul. Lord, I pray for those that are Jonathans, that they just go for it. They got it in hand. And then we see a victory at the end of it. Lord, I thank you so much. So much for what you've done in our lives. Lord, I thank you for each person here that is willing to just give everything to you, Jesus, in the hardest times. And Lord, I just pray that we would back them. Lord, I pray that in your name. Amen.